Not everybody here. Mr. Vandershot, are you here?
Yes, Your Honor. Can you hear me?
Yes, that is very good. And Ms. Hughes, are you here?
Yes, good morning, Your Honor.
Very good. This is the case of State versus Archer, consolidated for argument with State versus Russell. We have got 6 members of the court here in the courtroom, and I believe you can see us on one of the screens. Is that correct?
I cannot see you, Your Honor.
I cannot either, Your Honor.
There, now can you see?
Yes, Your Honor.
On the screen. Oh, yes.
Very good. Yes, I think it just came on. So, and if you can hear us, you should be able to get any questions we might have while you are arguing. But if you have any problems with the technology or you can't hear us, let us know in whatever way that you can. Justice Miller Lerman, like you, is also on WebEx.
Good morning. Justice Miller Lerman participating by WebEx, and I'm not sure if counsel can see me.
I can see you and hear you.
I can also see you and hear you.
Great. Thanks so much.
With those preliminaries, I believe we're ready to go. Does anybody have any questions before we proceed?
I don't have any questions.
I do not either, Your Honor.
So thank you very much again. Good morning to all of you, and a special good morning to you, Mr. Vandershot, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning as well to the court and justices. Good morning, counsel. I would like to first say that I appreciate you allowing us to do this by WebEx. I know that we did miss a little bit of a deadline, but I wanted to thank you for allowing us to participate this way. My name is Scott Vandershot. I'm the Washington County Attorney, and at this time, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This is an exception case filed by us under 29-23-1501. As we look at the procedure briefly of what this case was, we filed the matter in county court. At that time, Judge Samuelson, who has since retired, found probable cause, and the matter was bound over to district court. Counsel for the defendant filed a plea and abatement. That plea and abatement was granted and sent back down to Judge Samuelson in county court. At that time, after the hearing, Judge Samuelson did not find probable cause, did not give an explanation why, and just closed the matter, at least at the county level. After that, we were trying to understand why there was some discrepancies, one with there being probable cause, and then second, that there was no probable cause. So at that time, we direct filed the matter in district court. District court held a preliminary hearing where there was the evidence that was offered was the 2 transcripts of the prior county court matters. I believe there was a curriculum vitae that was offered by the defendant for a witness. Those were the matters that were, I believe, offered at the time. The matter came back finding no probable cause, at which time we thought we might be able to get an understanding, given the climate at the time, which was difficult for us, considering that we had received 1 and then later on another memorandum from the Attorney General as it related to CBD or CBD products. We were uncertain as to what exactly the status of the law was. And so we thought we might, by filing in district court, be able to understand that so that not only us, but the public could understand as well what conduct or what items would be legal to possess or not part of the Controlled Substance Act. We did not receive that information with the finding of no probable cause. Judge Sampson did not articulate any sort of reasoning. He did leave the record open for a period of time for counsel for the defendant. LB 657, I believe, had just been passed, and she was able to introduce that to the court as well. So again, when we were given a scenario of what exactly we needed to do, we felt like we were kind of at a crossroads. There, at least at the time, and I still believe does exist, some questions in regards to CBD products and exactly what they contain and things of that nature, how they fit in the Controlled Substance Act, how they fit with Statute 28-4-1407, which talks about the admittance of lab reports in the prima facie case. We thought at that time, instead of continuing to either arrest or charge the defendants in this case and go through circular reasoning, because the court had dismissed the matter without prejudice, that we thought it would make more sense and be fair just to try and get an understanding, because again, we couldn't seem to find any information out in regards to what exactly had happened with the passage of LB 657. So we've appealed to this court for a couple of things. Number one, to ask that you give some direction possibly to the district court, that you have them explain their reasoning, because again, we're not certain. And certainly any supposition by myself or even counsel in regards to, you know, why it was dismissed is exactly what we're asking. And so the first thing we had asked this court in our application is to remand the proceeding back to the district court so that we can see some kind of understanding or some kind of analysis. In the alternative, we would be asking.
Did you ever ask the district court for some articulation of what was missing?
Well, not as part of the record, no, Your Honor, but we did. I wasn't the attorney on that case. It was my chief deputy. I believe there were some discussions, but I can't answer that question directly. You know, there is nothing on the record because the matter just came back. So there was no hearing at that time. There was just a written opinion.
What about the judge's ruling on the plea and abatement? Would that have given some direction on what the district court judge was thinking?
Well, that's possible. Again, we're not certain because there wasn't anything that, from the preliminary hearing. The issue that I believe Judge Sampson had sent back of the plea and abatement was that the first preliminary hearing had a police officer that testified as to the nature of the substance and to the lab report. The issue seemed to be whether or not there was enough foundation or whether he could give an opinion as to the subject matter or the controlled substance. That was my understanding of why it was sent back down to the county court on the plea and abatement. Again, as I've said, the other thing that we'd like to be asking for is an authoritative exposition of law to serve as kind of a precedent. You know, this court just recently, last year, with State versus Stanko, was able to look at a trespass case and give us information and analysis on that as an item of first impression. I believe that this also is a matter of first impression. I'm not aware that LB 657 has been interpreted in a certain way, how it would work with other statutes in regards to the Controlled Substance Act or with, again, statute 28-4-1407, which talks about the admittance of a lab report. And the prima facie case, it would exist once that is accepted by the court. The statute also talks about the ability to admit other evidence, circumstantial or otherwise, to identify the controlled substance. So I'm not aware of that. And again, given that, you know, products exist now, they are existing everywhere. The fact that there is dissension, at least as far as I can tell, with county attorneys, whether it's lawful to possess those items, or whether it's just they're not charging. Again, we also haven't seen anything.
So what specifically do you want this court to do? Do you want us to send this back to the district court or the county court and have them tell you why they didn't side with you in the preliminary hearing? Or do you... Seems that you are asking for us to interpret a specific statute.
Well, I guess I would leave that up to the discretion of the court. I mean, certainly if you send it back down, there could be an appeal from that, depending on how that pans out in regards to what the logic of the court was. So certainly there could be another proceeding that could end up with you. That being said, if the court looks at it as far as judicial economy, it would make some sense to just do an authoritative exposition.
Counsel, LB 657 was not in effect on the date of the offenses alleged in these two cases, was it?
It was not.
Then what relevance does it have to our analysis today?
Well, it's a great question. The answer is I don't know. I do know that the court accepted a copy of what was the final bill from LB 657 from defense counsel. So I don't know if it made a difference in regards to the court's ruling or it did not. And again, that's kind of what we're trying to understand and why we listed it as one of the errors in the application is because we're not certain whether that did play a factor. And that's why we would be asking for some clarity on that. With that, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Hughes, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, first, I'd just like to elaborate a little bit on the procedural history of the case. I was present for all three of the filings. The original case was bound over from county court to district court, at which time the district court sustained a plea and abatement on the grounds that there was no testimony about the lab report as far as whether the substances tested were illegal as enumerated under the Nebraska Controlled Substances Act. So the case was dismissed, refiled, and that time the county court, well, there was a preliminary hearing and the lab technician was called to testify. And all of that is part of the record. And after that, both parties submitted briefs, at which time the county court then dismissed for lack of probable cause. So I think it's fair to assume that the court sided with defense's brief in that case. Then for a third time, the county attorney files a direct filing into district court. And again, the matter is heard. State presented no additional evidence. Defendant presented evidence through UNMC Dr. Matthew Garlinghouse, and the court then asked for additional briefs and reviewed the two preliminary hearing transcripts from the previous proceedings, and again ruled in favor of defense, presumably relying on the contents of those briefs and the contents of the preliminary hearing during the third direct filing. I believe that the law was clear prior to the enactment of LB 657 in that CBD oil, at least that which was sold by appellees, was never an enumerated controlled substance under Nebraska statutory law for three reasons. First, the pharmacological effects or activity of CBD oil are different from those of THC. Second, the source of the CBD oil that the appellees sold is unknown, which means it could have come from a totally legal source like flaxseed. And because the source is unknown, the record is void of any evidence that it was a synthetic equivalent to any illegal substance. And finally, there was no THC found during Alex McCallick, the lab technician's examination of the CBD oil that was sold by appellees. So first, with respect to pharmacological activity, that's important under Nebraska Revised Statute 28405 sub C sub 12, which says tetrahydrocannabinols, including but not limited to synthetic equivalents of the substances in the plant. And then it goes on to say they're isomers with similar chemical structure and pharmacological activity. And then it lists several substances, none of which are CBD oil. So you have to find substances that both have the same isomers with similar chemical structure and pharmacological activity. And the legislative intent was clear in putting the word and in front of pharmacological activity. This was the reason why at the third preliminary hearing, I called Dr. Garlinghouse, who testified to a reasonable degree of medical certainty that CBD oil and THC do not have similar pharmacological effects. That is dispositive with respect to that statute. So the CBD oil sold by appellees is not illegal under 28405 sub C sub 12.
The information that was filed does not allege THC, correct? It alleges cannabidiol or CBD?
That is correct, Your Honor. And that is not.
Is cannabidiol a listed substance on Schedule 1?
No, it is not. And that's why you have to then go break down, well, could it be one of these synthetic equivalents or something with similar pharmacological activity because it's not enumerated. So the statute covers all these things that are being created that are not the exact same where, you know, they're going and changing one chemical compound or something like that. So you have to then break it down and see, well, even though it's not enumerated, could it be something else that's illegal because of its chemical structure? And that's what 405 sub C sub 12 speaks to.
Do you believe the evidence establishes that the substance that we are considering is not included on any schedule.
Correct. It is not.
Thank you.
Either by way of name or by way of chemical structure or pharmacological activity. The second argument is that under 28405 sub C, sub 25, sub M, CBD oil is not a synthetically produced substance that could be an equivalent. The lab technician himself said that CBD oil is not a synthetic equivalent of THC or marijuana. That's contained in the record. And then he also testified again that he was not able to identify the source. So we can't say that it's a synthetic equivalent because there's no evidence of where the source of this is from. And the lab tech further testified that had he been given information that the source of the CBD oil was something like flaxseed, a totally legal substance, it would have yielded the exact same results that he analyzed in this case. And then finally, under 28401 sub 13 and 2-503 sub 1, hemp is not considered a controlled substance if it has less than 0.3% THC. Again, there was no THC found in the substance that was analyzed by Alexander Michalik, which was seized by Appellees. I believe that LB 657 is only relevant because that was enacted, I believe, to clarify, which was already the case. CBD oil is not an enumerated controlled substance. It does not have the properties equivalent to any enumerated controlled substance. And LB 657 clarified the statutory law for those who felt it was ambiguous. And finally, I would say to the extent that any of this law is ambiguous under the rule of lenity, it should be interpreted in the favor of the defendant. For these reasons, I would ask the court to affirm the lower court's ruling. Again, I think the analysis lies in the fact that there were three separate hearings, three records for the court to look at, multiple briefs that were submitted that contained all of the arguments that I just set forth for you. The court had ample evidence and law to look at in order to render its decision. And it's not arbitrary and capricious, and the lower court's decision should be affirmed. Thank you.
Counsel, before your time is gone, in section 28-405 sub C, sub 25, it refers to as listed in subdivisions A through L. And then we're referring to subdivision M. It's been a long time since kindergarten, but I don't think M is between A and L. So how does M fit into this?
Your Honor, I believe that that was an argument that was made along the way, and I would have to pull from the state, and that was my response to the state arguing that the subsection C25M was one subsection under which this could be considered illegal. So I would agree with the court that M does not fall in A through L. But again, CBD oil is not enumerated anywhere in the Nebraska Controlled Substances Act, never has been, and does not contain the chemical structure necessary to be considered an illegal substance. The fact is it does not have the similar pharmacological activity of any controlled substance ever listed in the Nebraska Controlled Substances Act. That's a required element if it's not listed. Doesn't have it. Dr. Garlinghouse testified to that, so it's not a controlled substance.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 1 minute and 59 seconds.
1 minute and 59 seconds, Mr. Vandeschaft.
Thank you, Your Honor. You know, this is exactly what we're talking about. I think the Appellee and I join in the same thing. If it was so obvious, then why aren't we told? If it's so obvious that we are off base, or even as maybe implied by the Appellee's brief, that I'm a little denser than the person, you know, next to me, which is fine, that then why not tell us? You know, in law school, there was a phrase.
There's some authority that a county court judge or a district court judge has to articulate why they have not decided one way or another in a preliminary hearing?
No. You know, but I think given the nature of this issue, the fact that there was confusion, again, if you go back to the Attorney General's memorandums, not one but two, that would disagree with the appellee's assertion of what exactly was the controlled substance and things of that nature. But again, you know, what we're stuck with is we don't know whether or not that's the case. And so, no, there isn't anything that requires it. And if you look at the Stanko case, it'll tell you the judge specifically said he wasn't going to address that issue when it was brought up before you on an exception hearing then. What we're asking for is just some sort of designation. I think it's as important for the public to understand. And again, maybe, I don't think it's just us. We hear from a lot of prosecutors that they're uncertain where the law is here. But I don't think it's right to leave folks in the dark in regards to what is illegal conduct and what is, illegal conduct. I think it makes sense so that we don't have to do this. And again, we chose this avenue. We didn't continue to charge somebody. And quite frankly, if Judge Sampson thought that heavily that it was a closed issue, why not just dismiss it with prejudice and instructions for us never to refile? That wasn't done in this case. And we didn't choose to refile because it didn't seem just and fair. So we're asking that you sustain the exception.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That then concludes arguments on this case and concludes arguments for the day for this court. So we are adjourned.
Thank you.
And you folks are excused. Thank you very much for participating by WebEx.
Thank you
for allowing it.
Bye.